This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
Hello and welcome to the WTF1 podcast with myself, Hayden Gullis, and of course, as always, my co-host for this is James Coker, all the way from the United States. But we're not heading to the United States this week. We are heading to the Dutch Grand Prix, and the build-up is really starting to come alive. We've had, of course, the drivers' press conferences. And James, we're going to start off with a big thing that came out of the drivers' press conference, and that was Max Verstappen. It's his 200th race weekend this week. He's only 26 years old, which is crazy to think about. But he has already said in that he doesn't see himself doing another 200. And he's definitely hit the halfway stage, gone past the halfway stage of his career, which I think is crazy to think about it when a 26-year-old, you know, doesn't have that. But I suppose at the same time, when they've come in so early into their career, maybe it does make sense.
I think it makes sense. I don't think Max is tired of racing. Mm. I think Max is tired of all the other obligations that come with being a driver in Formula One. Yeah. I think similar to Kimi Raikkonen, if Max could just show up and drive the car, he probably would do this forever. Yeah. But I think he is just exhausted with all of the other hoops he has to sort of jump through just to have the right to be able to drive a Formula One car.
Max Verstappen, I feel like, wants two things. Either you can... a massive reduction on race calendar, a lot less races.
Yeah.
Because 24 is a crazy amount. And that's obviously a big reason why he's at 200 already, you know, at such an early age. Yes, okay, he came into Formula One as the youngest ever Formula One driver. But also, you know, we're getting 24 races this year. It's a lot quicker to get to that milestone compared to, you know, the days of Michael Schumacher doing it. Or you go before that and you look at the days of you know, Jim Clark getting so many races or Jackie Stewart. You know, in those days, there was hardly any races in a season. So it is completely different. But yeah, I feel like it's either less races in a season or, you know, an easy contract system that is just jump in, jump out. You pick and choose the races over the season. Go, yeah, I'll race that one. I'll race at Zandvoort, of course. I'll do this one this season. But then you can get another driver in for the team in these other races.
I also think that long-term Formula One should consider about the media obligations they have for all of the drivers. I know the human element's very important, and we want to care about these people, and that's what makes a lot of us tune in. It's not just the thrill of the race. It's the human interest piece. However, I do feel like there needs to be maybe a little bit more balance. And also, when drivers are on the grid, when they're at a track for race weekends, I do not think people should just be able to walk up to them and take photos.
Yeah,
I know there are some drivers like Lewis Hamilton who would make a point to have like a security team with them so they aren't bothered. But I do not know how drivers are able to focus during race weekends when they're constantly being bombarded by anybody with a paddock pass.
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. I kind of understand that. But at the same time, you know, these guys are public figures and, you know, they are... It's not like they've got a massive queue to get through throughout the day. It could just be one person catching them from the paddock hospitality to where the garage is. And I went there recently. I went to Hungary, and I'm not going to name names of drivers who were very open to fans and those who are very closed off and were just like, you know, I'm going here. You're not getting a picture right now. Some of them will do that. Some of them will just, you know, have their headphones in or not even have headphones in. They're just walking, like stop for a picture, and they just pretend they did not hear that fan calling that their name, so they will just cross to where they need to go. And then there'll be others who will stop and they'll happily smile for a picture and move on. But you know, it's a very quick stop. It's not like, okay, cool, we're gonna have a chat now. No, it's just bam, smile, off I go. And I think, you know, they've been racing their whole lives, and it's not a case of this is as soon as you get to Formula One, all of a sudden now you are greeted with people outside this paddock area. You're going to have, you know, doing karting, doing younger years, sponsorship duties. You're going to have, you know, people who you know, pay for your career. Your career is nothing without these people who pay for your career, who will come to your races as a junior driver and will come and watch. And whoever your manager is or whatever, even yourself, will make sure you take that time, those obligations, to go and spend time with those people to keep them happy, but also start conversations to see where the future of your career could possibly go as well. So I think, yes, I understand it, that sometimes it's full focus and, you know, for example, on the grid, if they're sat in the car or something like that, oh, can I have a picture? I think when it's on the grid, I think people know to behave in that sort of scenario. But just around a paddock and, you know, it's just in between session or the driver's off to the media pen after a session, I don't think that's a massive issue. And this makes some, you know, I see some fans who were there who would get a picture taken or just a signature. And it is just the joy on their face. It's the greatest day of their life at that one moment. So taking that away, I think, would just be such a huge shame.
Okay, I think that's a very good point, that maybe there is some sort of compromise that could be made, like where on like days where it's like a practice session, that's fine. But like maybe on race day, maybe on Sunday when the Grand Prix is, maybe there's like a rule. You just sort of give them their space.
Don't touch me. Don't come near me. This is my circle and you stay away.
I'm just thinking about high performance athletes in other sports and how none in most sports that I can think of right now are never expected to stop and take a photo with a fan when they're about to compete.
Yeah. But I wouldn't say the Formula One drivers are expected to do it. I think fans have that expectation of any sport. I look at football and I look at players who walk past when they come off the team bus, and you know, they're walking past those fans. Some will stop for pictures, some will stop to sign stuff, some will just completely ignore them. And I see social media posts all the time. It's just like, you know, without these guys supporting your team, you wouldn't have a career. And they're right to an extent, but they're also not right to an extent, because obviously that you know, sports, that athlete has gone through a lot more than just performing for that one season of that team. You know, they've gone for a whole career, they've gone for their whole life building up to that, sacrificing so much to get to that moment, that I don't think a lot of the time that they do owe fans. If they stop and make that time for a fan, brilliant, that's incredible. But they don't necessarily have to do that. If they just go, no, I'm going here. And there are definitely a lot of drivers. Like I say, I'm not going to name names, but there are a lot of drivers that I see that are just going to blank you and just walk on and just carry on. I'm like, fair play. You know, you do you.
This is a slight tangent, but when I was a kid, I went to a Texas Rangers game, baseball game in Dallas, Texas, or in Arlington, which is outside of Dallas. And I was waiting outside of the players' parking lot to catch like a glimpse of all the players as they were leaving the parking lot in their cars. And there was a catcher who played for the Texas Rangers forever named Ivan Rodriguez, also known as Pudge Rodriguez, fan favorite, left the parking lot in kind of an old beat up Ford Ranger, which is like a small pickup truck, and stopped and waved to fans, and everybody was just like elated that he stopped and even acknowledged that they were waiting there. And right afterwards, Jose Canseco, who at the time was a very famous player, was a big home run hitter, was famous for taking steroids and admitting it, but he was a big star, like peeled out in a Lambo and just like zoomed right by everybody.
Yeah. Some of them just want to get out there as soon as possible.
Yeah.
But some of them love it. Some of them love the attention as well.
Right. So Max Verstappen, another 200 races. According to my calculator on my phone, that'd be 8 1/3. If we're talking about a 24 race calendar, that'd be 8 1/3. 8.3 years. So
which still feels like a long time, to be fair.
It does. Yes. But he'd only be what? 33?
33,
yeah, 33, 34.
33 would be a great age for him to stop, because his number is 33.
Yeah,
so I think that would be a great age for him to stop, to be fair. But that doesn't mean he's just going to stop racing. We know that he loves his GT. We know that he loves a lot of other things. I don't think he'd go over to try and do an Indy 500 or go for a Triple Crown, because I never get that ambition, that drive from him. He's not someone that goes, I am Max Verstappen, I'm the greatest ever. Like I get that from Fernando Alonso. I get that Fernando Alonso wants the Triple Crown and he wants to be regarded as the best driver ever. Max Verstappen, just I feel like, just wants to be known as somebody who just loves racing and is also fucking incredible at it. So I think, you know, that's sort of what Max Verstappen vibe is. So I can't see him going off and doing Indy. It's more just sort of endurance championship, maybe LMP, or maybe it's going to be GT cars. But just enjoying.
That's so interesting about the difference between Max and Fernando Alonso that you're talking about, because one driver seems to be obsessed with their legacy and what their legacy is going to be, and the other person is living in the moment and doing what they want.
Yeah,
that's cool. Next up, I have very exciting news. I now am a co-owner of Formula One.
You're a co-owner of Formula One. So all these ideas that I am pushing now, I can just go to you. And
you can go to me and I can run it up the flagpole. I'm very excited to announce that I now own one share in Formula One. Today, Liberty Media had a public offering on the American Stock Exchange listing 10.65 million shares on the market priced as $77.50 per share, trading under the ticker symbol FWONK.
FWONK.
FWONK. It's a FWONK stonk.
Okay, I like that. I like a good FWONK.
And I had a little money in my investing account, so I was like, all right, I'll buy a share. So I now own one share in the Formula One Series C stock that is listed on the American Stock Exchange. So they better start listening to my ideas, because I now have a vested interest in all of this.
So if you're wondering why F1 is going down the pan, we now have clear evidence that James is ruining all of Formula One. And I think other series also apply. I mean, maybe go start on your own, possibly, because Formula One's no more. It's over for us all.
Could you imagine like them having a, they won't do this, but could you imagine them having a shareholder meeting and me just showing up in like full Ferrari gear with like a chili pepper hat and like a big like flag?
What do you mean full Ferrari gear? That race suit overall that you were wearing a few weeks back. Get that on.
Oh yeah.
And just sit there in, yeah, chili hat, chili, what was it, bucket hat. Sounds good.
Yeah.
And be like, I know. You just go to the whole room and go, shh, 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 shh. You're just all going to listen now, okay? You're all going to listen. I'm in charge, and we're going to make Formula One great again.
I love it. Hayden, do you invest?
I don't, unless Pokemon cards count, which they can. I mean, you know, I've got, you know,
hey,
there's a stop. Pokemon there's a cards and
Pokemon cards and Funko Pops appreciate in value, so that is investment.
Exactly. So with George Russell one day, this man is a world champion. He might go up in value.
Yeah. So you're not a big, you don't invest in stocks. If you were to invest in stocks, would you buy FWONK?
I'd buy lots of FWONK. I'd get all the FWONK. I'd get right up in that FWONK. And I'd go for it, mate. I'd go to town on the FWONK. We'd be going shooting for the stars. All the rise, all the fall, buy it low, all of that sort of stuff. This is why I don't do shares. I have no idea what I'm talking about when it comes
to
shares.
Are you familiar with the GameStop stock saga that happened a couple years ago?
I know about the GameStop, where loads of people were like buying and selling it and sort of manipulating the market, weren't they? Like lots of gamers.
GameStop and AMC, there was a whole group on a subreddit that drove the price up. I wonder if we could start a GameStop-esque movement to buy up FWONK and start dictating how Liberty Media runs Formula One.
Oh, how to get WTF One shut down. We take down Formula One's price on the share market. I'm happy. You tell me where I need to put my money. If it needs to go up someone's FWONK, then that's where it's going to go.
I love it. All right. I think we've said FWONK enough today. But speaking of a FWONK.
Getting started.
Yeah. Speaking of a FWONK, I do feel like we need to issue a little bit of a mea culpa. We did a dumb exercise game last week where we talked about what if instead of adding two teams, we had three drivers for each team. And we talked about, you know, we made some rules. That third driver had to be under the age of 25. And I know I said Pietro Fittipaldi, even though he's 28, as some pedantic Paul in the comments.
My head as well.
as some pedantic Paul in the comments pointed out to me. So yes, we did not stick to the rules the entire time, but we named who we thought should be the third driver for each team. It's typically like young drivers who are in F2 or have been in F2 recently. But we admittedly did not consider any female drivers for our third car. And that is our bad, because there are a number of talented and qualified drivers who deserve a shot in an F1 car. Just to name a few: Jessica Hawkins, Jamie Chadwick, Dorian Penn, Sophia Flörsch. And so we just want to say that I think that exercise is a symptom of a larger problem in motorsport, where there are a lot of really talented female drivers who deserve to be considered for some of these top series and these top seats. And the fact that two dumb podcasters didn't even think to include some of them is, I think, a symptom of a larger problem. So that's our bad.
That is. But on a better note, F1 Academy is back this weekend, which is a series that I really, really love. You know, I think with W Series, then moving into Formula One Academy is a great series. And somebody who I am very, very excited to be taking apart is a good friend of mine called Nina, who is going to be jumping into the car this weekend for the wild card. And I'm very, very excited to see how she performs.
You're friends with her?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, she's come from... She did a little bit of social media management on the F1 esports as she was starting to blow up on her own socials. Cool. And then, so I met her over in Sweden. I've met her a few times, met her again in Hungary. We're both out there for the Grand Prix. And really excited to see how she gets on this weekend. I don't really know how to say her last name.
Neither do I, to be honest.
Okay. Fem's not here at the moment. My girlfriend's Dutch, but she's not here at the moment, so she would be able to tell
me definitely. I'm going to say Gadaman, but it could be
Gadaman. I feel like the G is pronounced with a H.
Hademan.
But man Hademan is also kind of like mon in Dutch.
Okay.
Mon.
So as we know, F1 Academy is back for round four. We got two races at Zandvoort. Abby Pulling has a dominating lead in the standings right now, driving for Road and Motorsport, also representing Alpine. She currently has like a lead with like 147 points. And I think Chloe Chambers and Dorian Penn are close in second, or with around 80.
Fighting for seconds, yeah.
83 and 81. So like Abby Pulling has a considerable lead in F1 Academy. We're of course seeing a wild card entry and Dutch racer Nina Hademan, if I'm saying it right. But she's making her F1 Academy debut. Very exciting. The car's going to be run by Prema. Livery is going to be sponsored by the Female Quotient, which is a media consulting firm. I saw the livery. I thought it looked really cool. Nina is currently competing in British F4. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
And it'll be really interesting to see how she does in her F1 Academy debut. And how do you feel about the season in F1 Academy so far?
I honestly thought it was going to be Dorian Pinn just absolutely dominating the field. Saudi Arabia, she was class of the field. Abby Pulling was closest challenger, but it looked like it was going to be Dorian Pinn all the way. Then she ran the checkered flag twice, didn't know that the checkered flag came out, got penalized, lost the win. And since then, Abby Pulling's just ran with it. And, you know,
She's been pulling away with the championship.
She really has.
Okay.
And with Junior Series, it's not as clear cut as, it's all a spec series. All the drivers are the same car. It's all about which driver is best. You know, practice comes into a lot of it as well. You know, how much time do you get in that car? And it's all about these drivers for the junior teams picking the right team to be a part of. You know, you could be assigned with a team, or you could be associated with a real life Formula One team, but if they don't put any backing towards you as a driver, don't give you the time to test the car, it's really going to hurt your performances when you jump in the race and your only practice is really the car out on track in that free practice session. So I know that Abby Pulling has and Alpine do a fantastic job of not only supporting Abby Pulling, but also Sophia Flörsch, to name two, and to help those drivers develop. And obviously that's going to be really fundamental and important for Abby Pulling going forward. I know that was very similar with Jamie Chadwick in the early stages of the W Series. The reason why she was doing so well so early on is not only because she is a fantastic racer, but she'd had a lot more experience in those Formula 3 sort of S cars compared to the other other competitors. And in doing so, you get that advantage over the other drivers. But Abbie Pullin, you know, taking that and running with it and doing a fantastic job. And I'm really excited. You know, I'm a big fan of Formula Academy, of F1 Academy. And I think it just needs to be shouted out about a lot more and showcased a lot more, because I think whilst there are incredibly talented women who are driving in so many series across the world, I still think we are definitely lacking, and I think we still are hunting for that one driver that goes, wow, this is Formula One material right here. And it's you know, so simple, because if you look at how many drivers there ever are, you know, in the younger karting right now, you could probably have 1,000 boys and five girls who are racing right now in just a small section of Europe. And to pick one of those to go all the way to Formula One, you're more likely to find one from the boys than for the girls. So F1 Academy, W Series, you know, it really came into it. It wasn't about separating men and women. It wasn't about saying, you know, men are better than women. We're going to put the woman over here and they're just going to race over here and have their own separate series. Because in Formula One, it's not like that. I think it's a very, very, you know, equal sport. It's about showcasing that this isn't just a sport for men. If you're a young girl and you want to look up to a woman, you can. And there's some great women who are racing in this series. And I think that's where F1 Academy really needs to start to push, to inspire the next generation. And if it can do that, you know, 20 years time, I reckon we're going to have a really good chance for having multiple, not just one, make it all the way to Formula One, but multiple talented women making it to Formula One.
I agree with you 100%. I think the whole purpose of F1 Academy is not to create a direct ladder series to Formula One. It's to inspire the younger generation of girls and women who are interested in motorsport to give them something to work towards. It's about visibility and it's about representation. And it's to inspire the girls right now who are 5, 6, 7 years old. Yeah. Oh, maybe I want to get into karting. And then they're starting the same time as the other boys are. And then by the time they're like 12, 13, 14, they're getting scouted by driver development programs and getting scouted by like lower level teams. And while it's taken 10, 15 years, the playing field is slightly more level.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And it doesn't mean that these drivers that are currently in there aren't talented. And I do think that F1 Academy also needs to work on the ladder, as we put it, to getting to Formula 1. Because I don't think there is a direct line from F1 Academy. Because, you know, you look at Marta Garcia, did a really good job last season. What is she doing now? You know, she's doing, I think it's GT racing and doing sort of like WEC with Iron Dames. I think that's how you pronounce it.
Yeah, that was our next story. So yeah, she, you know, F1 Academy champion Marta Garcia is set for her GT racing debut with Iron Dames in the Ligier. Am I saying it right? Is it Ligier or Ligier?
Ligier, I would say. I would say Ligier. Maybe.
European Series, which is a ladder series to the European Le Mans Series. Yeah. And she's racing with the Iron Dames. She also had a rookie test with the Formula E team ERT in May. So she's had some opportunities, but it's not a direct progression from F1 Academy to something higher. She's having to sort of explore a number of options to figure out what is the next step in her motorsport career.
Well, having to really find, and I don't want to, you know, put down the other series because they're incredible series on their own. But if you go to F1 Academy, surely the aim should be going on the ladder to Formula One, not going, okay, here you go. Here's a great opportunity in F1 Academy. Now you've got some popularity. Piss off. Off you go to Formula E, or off you go to out of the Formula One structure. No, that's not how it should be. It should be a case of, cool, you've done an amazing job in F1 Academy, and there should be teams in F3 being like, this is a really, really talented superstar. We want her in Formula 3 and try and push her forward. And obviously, Sophia Flores is doing a great job, but I can understand why a lot of drivers don't pick up some opportunities in Formula 3. And I've spoken to other younger drivers before about, you know, just driving in Formula 3 and options are always there. But sometimes that option is just one of the worst teams on the grid. And on a 30-car grid on Formula 3, if you watch the Formula 3 races, only I think the 23 cars are in the standings. If you're outside that top 23, you're not even on the standings. People aren't even going to know you're there.
Wow.
So you have to be very, very cautious about which team that you sign for to make sure that not only are you giving yourself the best opportunity to fight with the other drivers and the other teams, but also the best opportunity for that publicity to showcase not only who you are, but show other teams, maybe Formula 2, look, I want that promotion. I want to move up this ladder rather than being lost.
I wonder if there is an opportunity in F1 Academy where if, aside from winning, you know, prize money and the prestige of winning this, the championship for F1 Academy, there's also like a guaranteed mm-hmm. Formula 3 seat the next season that's fully funded.
Yeah.
With a team and with a good team. Like I know they're not competitive this year, but like historically Prema.
Yeah.
I think it'd be a great opportunity for a brand to partner with a Formula 3 team. And let's say like a brand that wants to support women in sports. Let's say it's, you know, Charlotte Tilbury. Let's say Charlotte Tilbury is like, okay, we want to fully fund a Formula 3 seat for whoever wins F1 Academy. And we're also going to sponsor that driver and sponsor that livery.
Yeah.
I think that would be an incredible incentive for competition.
Yeah. I mean, there would have to be careful implications around it to show that it's not just that obviously, you know, it's still equal between boys and girls going through the ranks. But I fully agree that, you know, and it's all about sponsorship. It's all about finding the right sponsor. Charlotte Tilbury is obviously a sponsor that is really coming to the F1 Academy market and, you know, has been a part of this season. And I think would be a great sponsor to back whoever wins the championship to, yeah, give them that opportunity in Formula 3 and try and find them a top seat. Because that's all it is, really, in the younger formulas. It's not a case of Prema come along and say, oh, I want our pick. Sometimes it's a case of, you know, the drivers with a lot of money come to Prema and go, you know, you seem like the best team. We want to pick you to give on my driver the best shot of being seen by young driver academies and also from other Formula One teams. So yeah, all it needs is a big sponsor to put some money behind these incredible women. And then we've got someone on the F3 grid alongside Sophia Flourish.
Yeah, full show. All right, moving on.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ Mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to iqbar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's iqbar.com, promo code KELLER20.
We're continuing to get like drips of updates on the Formula One movie, which made me wonder, we're going to do a little exercise. If each Formula One driver had a biopic or they were being portrayed in a film, who would play them in a movie?
Yes, I like this. I always like a good exercise on one of these podcasts. Get that mind ticking.
Do you want to go first? You want me to?
I've got a very obvious one, and it's a slam dunk, and I don't think anyone else can play this person. Lance Stroll is Taylor Lautner. They're a spitting image of each other. So,
oh yeah, wow. So you're talking about the guy from Twilight?
Yes.
Spot on. Taylor Lautner.
No difference between those two people. They're exactly the same guy. So Lance Stroll will be played by Taylor Lautner.
He'd have to have longer hair for sure. But Taylor Lautner would be great as Lance Stroll. I dig it. That's really good. What else you got?
What else I got? Maybe like, I don't know, a Lewis Hamilton, be like a Michael B. Jordan.
I have someone better for Lewis Hamilton.
Okay.
I have Lucien Laviscount.
I have no idea who that is. Right, let's have a little look up. Let's have a little look up.
I feel like to play Lewis Hamilton, I think you need to be a British actor.
Lucien.
And there's lots.
Now, I feel like you need to be American because Lewis Hamilton has an American accent.
No, he does not.
Yes,
he's British.
Yes, he does. Lewis
he
Hamilton
does not have an American, accent. That's great.
British accent. He does.
He has a very subtle British accent, but he still has a British accent.
It's definitely got that American twang to it.
No way.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
I don't hear that at all.
But no, I can see this as well.
As you know, Hayden, or maybe you don't know, I am a huge Emily in Paris fan. And Lucien Lauriston plays...
We're always
sitting down talking Emily in Paris. Lucien Lauriston plays Alfie in Emily in Paris. He is one of the love interests in the show. Hashtag justice for Alfie. And he is such a good actor. He's in incredible shape. I feel like he sort of also embraces the Riz that Lewis Hamilton brings to the grid. Got to bring the Riz. I think he's probably the best match that I've found of British actors for Lewis Hamilton. For Max Verstappen, I have Nicholas Hoult.
Nicholas Hoult. The name rings a bell. I think I know who you're on about. Let me just.
He's like young Charles Xavier. He's also in The Great. He's King. He's Peter the Great in
yeah,
Peter
I'm seeing
in,
this.
In The Great.
I'm seeing this. Yeah. I've got this. Yeah. Okay.
Now for Pierre Gasly. Now, I didn't establish these rules up top, but it could be an actor at any age. So let's say the actor is 60 years old now. We can use a young version of them to play. We're bending time here. Pierre Gasly is Vincent Cassel. Do you know who Vincent Cassel is?
I'm searching up. I'm so bad with names. Vincent
Cassel. He was in Ocean's 12. He was also in Westworld. He's a French actor who's done like a number of English language films.
Is he getting
as
like
well.
De-aged in this or something? Because the person
he has to be de-aged. Okay. That's what I'm saying. At any age, I could see Pierre Gasly aging into Vincent Cassel.
Okay.
If Pierre Gasly takes care of himself, I think he's going to look like Vincent Cassel when he's older.
Okay,
and that's a compliment because I think Vincent Cassel is a very attractive old guy. He's a silver fox. He's a zaddy.
Yeah.
All right, who else do you have? Because I have a whole list.
I don't have any drivers, but I have Bernie Eccleston. Could either be played by Dame Judi Dench, or I'm thinking Edna from The Incredibles. We just give her a white wig. I think one of those two would be Bernie Eccleston.
Dame Judi Dench. Oh my God. That is so funny. Dude, I did not expect
James.
That.
We lost James.
that's too good. Okay, well, none of the ones I have are as funny as that, but I have Timothy Chalamet for Charlotte Claire.
Yeah. I mean, Tom Holland would be surely... you've got Tom Holland down, right? You just rung my mind.
No.
Tom Holland, Lando Norris, I feel like. And then,
that works.
Whoever plays Happy from the Spider-Man movies, he would play Zach Brown because they're just the splitting image of each other. they work so well. So I don't know what his name is.
I actually, in several videos, have called Charlotte Claire Vroom Vroom Timothy Chalamet.
Vroom. Jean Favreau, that's the guy. He would play Zach Brown.
Oh, yeah. I had someone else down for Zach Brown, I think. I had Ron Perlman. He was Hellboy. Okay. But John Favreau works too.
Yeah. I'll see what you mean. Yeah.
Okay. For Fernando Alonso, I have none other than Javier Bardem.
Yes. He's doing the film, isn't he?
I think he is. Yeah. But I feel like, they don't look exactly alike, but I feel like they have the same type of personality.
Yeah.
At least the personality that Javier Bardem has that he presents to the public. And there's also the movie that I don't know if you've ever seen. It's a Woody Allen film Woody Allen's been canceled, so we can't really tell you to go watch it. But there is a Woody Allen film with Javier Bardem and Scarlett Johansson called Vicky Cristy Barcelona.
Okay, never seen it.
And Javier Bardem approaches two Americans at a bar in, I think, Barcelona and is like, I want you to come with me to Oviedo. He's like, to where? He's like, to Oviedo. And he essentially tries to initiate a menage a trois with these two American women. And I'm like, I feel like Fernando Alonso would do this.
He's always trying to get people to Oviedo, isn't he? He's always trying to go, come down to Oviedo. We will pour your drinks from as high as we possibly can. I think if you haven't got him down, Toto Wolff would be Arnie. Easy one, I feel like.
Who?
Got the accent. Arnie.
Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Exactly.
Yes. Whenever I try to do a Toto Wolff impression, it always ends up being an Arnold Schwarzenegger
impression.
They're
the same. They're exactly the same.
It's like, Lewis, get to the chopper. For Checo Perez, I have Miles Teller. No, I'm just kidding. Not Miles Teller. I have Diego Calva. Do you know who Diego Calva is?
No, but I'm going to search him up.
He was in Babylon.
I'm not sure what I've typed in there. But,
the movie Babylon is kind of a stinker, but okay. It started strong and then ended very poorly. But he is like he's a good actor.
I've always seen on social media that everyone compares Sergio Perez to look like Tom Cruise. And you know what? I've never seen it.
Yeah,
I've never
see it.
Seen it. George Russell, he would be played by the mouse from Flushed Away. I feel like that's a good match. Or you've got Woody from Toy Story is the other obvious one.
Of course. Yeah. I loved when somebody put the Woody face over him in the interview, in the press interview. Yeah. Do you remember that?
Yes, yeah. You have Woody's face, but the voice is Prince Charming from Shrek, as we spoke about last week, where he's like, Kitten Whiskers, come here.
I love that. And then the rest of the grid can be played by Mads Mikkelsen.
Yeah, or we just get a load of dittos from Pokemon and they can just, you know, job done. They just shapeshift into it. Or Mystique from X-Men.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Do you know who Mads Mikkelsen is?
Yeah, I know who Mads Mikkelsen is. He's a...
Danish actor.
Yeah, did a Bond film. He's Casino Royale, yes.
Yeah. I can't explain this, but I feel like every other driver in motorsport, not F1 specifically, but every other driver in motorsport looks like Mads Mikkelsen.
Okay, I have no idea where you've got that from, but I'm going to roll with it.
And then this is not today's era of Formula One, but this guy's much taller than the driver I'm about to reference. But John Bernthal is a dead ringer for young Mario Andretti.
John Bernthal.
John Bernthal was the Punisher. Yeah, he was in The Walking Dead. Yeah. He was in The Bear.
Yeah.
If you look at a picture of young Mario Andretti, John Bernthal looks just like him. Yeah. It's insane.
Yeah.
However, he's a lot taller than Mario.
He can just walk around on his knees. It'll be fine. It'll be fine.
Put shoes on his knees.
Exactly. Put shoes on his knees. If you can't act with shoes on your knees, you can't act at all. That's as the old saying goes, isn't that right? That's what you learned in drama school, right, James?
Exactly. And this is going way off topic, but I think this is NASCAR related. I think we are due a Dale Earnhardt biopic.
Okay.
And there has been one, but I think Bradley Cooper needs to direct and star in a Dale Earnhardt biopic. If you look at a recent picture of Bradley Cooper with a mustache, mm-hmm. he kind of looks like Dale Earnhardt looked like towards the end of his career before he tragically passed away in a race. And there was a Dale Earnhardt biopic in like 2004, but it was made by ESPN. So it was a made for TV movie. Mm-hmm. And it starred Barry Pepper, who's a great character actor. He played Roger Maris in another movie. He's been in a number of things. Barry Pepper, great actor. J.K. Simmons is also in it. The acting in the movie is really good, but the movie is not great. It has like an 84% on Rotten Tomatoes from the audience score, but it has no critic score. And Dale Earnhardt Jr. apparently said it was the worst racing movie he had ever seen. And people make fun of it because in the movie, Barry Pepper playing Dale Earnhardt Jr. keeps going, I'm not going back to the mill. I'm not going back to that mill, daddy. I got to pursue my dreams. And also, I think the cars they used in the movie were way older than the time period.
Yeah.
So just like there's all sorts of things, like because it was a made for TV movie, I feel like they didn't really do Dale Earnhardt's story justice. Bradley Cooper right now, we're going on a crazy tangent right now. Bradley Cooper right now is 0-4 for being nominated for best actor at the Oscars, at the Academy Awards. The rumor is he really wants an Oscar. That's the whole reason why I did the Maestro movie about Leonard Bernstein. I feel like he's a dead ringer for Dale Earnhardt. I feel like he's probably one of the few people in Hollywood that could get this movie made. He's a great director. I think he would be able to embrace the character and spirit of Dale Earnhardt and give us a really cool, high-budget NASCAR movie.
Get it done. Get it made. Right, but he's got to keep the mustache, obviously. So let's keep the mustache.
Of course.
But yeah, that sounds good. I think that'd be really, really cool to get that made. Like, I think we don't have as much cool racing movies. There are a lot of bad racing movies. Rush is a brilliant one. I'd like to hope that F1 is going to be a good one. But I recently went back, it was a couple of years ago, and made a video where we watched the worst F1 movies, and there were some terrible ones. There have been some terrible ones in the past, but there's also been some really, really good ones. So,
What are some bad ones?
Oh, I can't remember what they were off the top of my head, but there was something. There was one from, it was a Bollywood film, I'm pretty sure, and it's where someone, there was like a high-speed chase from Formula One cars that they'd stolen from the Abu Dhabi circuit that they were just driving through, no helmets as well, and just driving through the streets, and it was just like, this is bad. And it's just maybe some of the crashes. I haven't watched the Ferrari film, but I have seen the clips of the crashes, and it's just all of a sudden this car that back then, the weight of those cars was hefty, like they're heavy cars, hits a curb, and then the next shot is it spinning around and somehow gaining height in the background.
Did you ever see the movie Driven with Sylvester Stallone?
I have seen the clip from that. That might be one that I'm also talking about where it's a high-speed chase, right? As well.
It's so bad. It's a Champ Car, which, you know, was like a split off of IndyCar during the Kart IRL split. And it stars Sylvester Stallone. There is a scene where they're racing like IndyCars in the street. It's such a bad movie. But I remember as a kid, I think I wasn't a kid. I was 16 when I saw it, but I loved it. I thought it was so good.
Yeah.
But like, I love bad movies. So I don't think I'm a good judge about that. But
so your favorite movie of all time, The Room, is that like one of the top movies?
No.
I did not hit her.
I did not. Hi, Mark.
Yeah, we need to get Tommy in for to star as one of our drivers. Who do we cast him as? Who are we casting him as?
Tommy Wiseau is going to be who's like the most ridiculous person on the grid.
I think it's gonna be Alonso. Like, imagine it being Alonso.
Yes, Tommy Wiseau as Fernando Alonso would be so funny.
That is perfect. I did not hit him. I did not.
I am Spanish. I am Spanish. Oh, hi, Mark. Anyway. All right, let's get back on track.
This is my favorite segment of our podcast, where we just have this little challenge. We go off on a tangent. We do some crazy mad stuff. And we just laugh about it. And then we just pour ourselves back in and be like, so Peter Bonington has just been announced as staying with Mercedes.
What a segue.
It's what we do every single time. But yeah, we bring ourselves back on track. Peter Bonington, Mr. Bono himself, has been promoted to head of race engineering at Mercedes, which will close the door, you know, on any Lewis and Bono, which I think was pretty much announced when Lewis moved to Ferrari. I'm pretty sure there was something in his contract that said that he wasn't allowed to take any members of Mercedes over to the Ferrari project with him, which kind of closed that door. But obviously, you know, if Bono wanted to do it himself, I don't know if there'd be a way of them stopping that. If Bono just said, cool, I've been offered a job from Ferrari completely separate, or I've gone to Ferrari and gone for a job. So, but yeah, that's going to shut down those talks. I believe that he has been working quite closely with Kimi Antonelli in his private testing, and they've been getting along well. So I
believe he's going to be working with him in FP1 at the Italian Grand Prix when Kimi Antonelli drives that practice session.
Yes,
right?
I don't know if it's been fully announced. I've seen a load of rumors, but maybe I've missed the proper fully announcement. But yeah, it'd be one of those like worst kept secrets if he's like, oh, here's Kimi Antonelli doing FP1. But yeah, it's rules in Formula One that each team on the grid must put a young driver in for one of their drivers at least once over the season. sound like that joke with Juan Pablo Montoya saying too many ones there. But yeah, so Russell will need to be replaced for a weekend and Hamilton will need to be replaced for a different weekend. And you'll have two junior drivers who would take their spot to give them a chance at some running in a Formula One car in an actual practice session. And obviously that makes sense that it would be Kimi Antonelli going in that seat. Also makes sense for it to be Lewis Hamilton, because of course he's leaving the team next season. So I'm really excited to see how that goes in Italy as well. And also, I hear potentially Antonelli's going to be announced as a driver at Monza as well. So that'd be really cool if that happens. But that's just a big rumor.
Okay. It also makes a lot of sense that Bono is taking this promotion and staying in Mercedes. He's been in Mercedes. He's been working. He worked as Hamilton's race engineer since 2013, won 6 World Drivers Championships with Hamilton and Mercedes. It makes a lot of sense that he's taking a promotion at a place he knows and is familiar with. He wants to stay in Brackley. He doesn't want to move to Maranello.
Yeah.
And also he's thinking about his career long-term. You know, what if he leaves to go with Lewis to Ferrari and then Lewis only stays there one season and then he's kind of SOL.
Yeah, exactly. You can build a longer relationship with Kimi Antonelli as a younger driver that, you know, Mercedes, I think, have a lot of backing in.
Yeah, for sure. Congratulations to Bono. Well earned. All right, moving on.
Yeah, let's move on. I thought you were going to move on.
Were you trying? Okay. Were you thinking of a hilarious joke? The FIA, I thought you were just like stewing on a hilarious joke and I was just waiting for you to say it because you were like laughing at yourself.
I was thinking of something of like relating to the musician Bono, but I had absolutely nothing.
Yeah. Uno, dos, tres, catorce.
Exactly, something along those lines. And then we just go, the FIA have implemented.
FIA has implemented a summer break rules change in regard to asymmetric braking. These systems apparently were already illegal, but new and additional text was added to the rules, causing speculation that some of the teams might have been running with illegal systems. Hayden, do you think that's conspiracy or do you think a few of the teams might have been sort of bending the rules?
I think there's always people bending the rules in Formula One. It's Formula One. People have been doing it for years. Everyone tries to jump through as many loopholes as possible. But as well as on top of this, there's also going to be other teams that are going to be ruffling some feathers and being like, oh, Red Bull must have been doing this because they were so far ahead for so many years. So this is something they must have been doing. Whether they've done it or not, I have no idea. I don't put together the Red Bull cars. I'm really sorry, everybody at home. I can't give you that information. But, you know, if they all of a sudden drop off massively in pace, then you could be allowed those suspicions for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of similar in a way to when Ferrari had such a powerful engine in 2019, and then we get to 2020, and all of a sudden, they're the slowest car in a straight line, like slower than a Renault engine. And then you start to think,
Those are fighting words right there.
Were you doing something fishy over there in Maranello? What was going on? Because you're not quite the same as last season. So we'll see. You know, in Zandvoort, they could be completely unaffected. Just like when there was some sort of regulation change. I don't know whether it was 22 or 23. I think it was 22. And we went to Singapore next. And all of a sudden, Red Bull dropped off pace. And everyone's like, they were cheating. Their floor was not right. They were cheating. We found them out. Red Bull suck now. And then they go to Japan the week after and dominate that weekend. And it's just like, it was just a fluke. Like, we just had a bad weekend. So we'll have to wait and see at Zandvoort. Maybe this will affect them. Maybe it won't. But yeah, I definitely think someone was sneakily using it.
It's very interesting when we see rule changes immediately affect teams' performance sometimes. Are you familiar with the story of Renault's tuned mass dampers in 05 and 06?
That was just before I started properly watching. I did recently watch a recap of it, and they got kind of compromised halfway through the season, didn't they, when they were doing so well?
So I made a video about this for Sports Illustrated a year ago, but one of the main videos I cited in for research for it was Aiden Millward's video, who I talk about a lot in these podcasts, who I think just makes great, great videos. If you don't watch Aiden Millward's YouTube, you should really subscribe to it. He makes great stuff. But in 05, they developed this tuned mass damper, which essentially is like a weight that's in the nose that allows for cars to be able to take curbs when it like stabilizes the impact of curbs, and you're able to sort of like curb strike and be way more aggressive on turns with the car. And Renault had developed this two-mass damper before anyone else. And then other cars started doing it as well. And it kind of more or less became accepted in the norm that all cars would now have this like system in the front of the car. But the rumor is that Flavio Briatore wanted to essentially patent them. And if you wanted a two-mass damper system in your car, you would have to buy them from him and Renault. And the rumor is that all the teams were like, all right, let's ban these then because fuck you. And the rumor is once tuned mass dampers were banned from Formula One, Renault's performance dropped off because for the next year, they were developing their entire car around the ability to use this concept.
Yeah. So that was 2007 that they had to rebuild their car.
Yeah.
So that like, makes sense then maybe why Alonso left as well, because obviously he dipped, didn't he, for 2007 to McLaren.
Right. Went to McLaren and then he came back, but Renault still was, you know, not the Renault of 05 and 06.
Could only win when their teammates putting it in a wall, sort of vibes. Renault, that sort of Renault team, Flavio Briatore, there's some dodgy stuff going on with that man. And I'm so glad he's back in Formula One with Alpine. Let's see what they can do there.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how formidable, to think of how formidable McLaren could have been if Alonso and Lewis could have gotten along.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it was something that was going to be brewing anyway. Right. But 2008, obviously, they were a good team. 2009, they weren't that great. They dropped off quite a bit. They had a better second half of the season. A lot of teams were struggling with the new KERS system and I think they were definitely one of them.
Because 07, they ended up tying for second, right? And lost by 1 point to Kimi Raikkonen, right?
I think that both drivers tied for second, yes. The team was disqualified that season because of Spygate.
Right.
There was an engineer spying, I believe, on the Ferrari and basically stealing stuff off the car.
Right, but that might have never gotten out if Alonso hadn't threatened Ron Dennis with leaking information, because essentially, you know, the rumor is that he threatened to leak to go to the press and talk, and so McLaren just had to get ahead of it and admit they were wrong.
Yeah.
So I mean, looking at the 2007 driver standings, Lewis and Fernando tied with 109 points. Kimi Räikkönen won with 110.
Yeah, 1 point off, and then 2008, to be fair, that championship could have gone either way out of the three drivers, because obviously Alonso would have taken some points off of Lewis. Massa would have been the number one driver. I don't think Räikkönen was really there.
No, Alonso was back at Renault in 2008.
Yeah, but if they were together, if they got along,
yes.
Obviously being in the same
100%.
Team. So maybe 100%. Massa could have won that championship instead if, you know, both or Alonso would have been able to get more points. Who knows how that could have gone. Maybe Hamilton won, taken off. Felipe Massa would have finally got that championship.
There's also the story from the book The Formula about Fernando Alonso's like entourage going into the McLaren garage and passing out envelopes of cash to everybody but the people that worked on Lewis's team.
Yeah. Oh, I just love the games, which is like, why aren't we seeing that as much anymore? You know, I guess because the guy in the other garage is your boss's son. So it's a bit harder to do stuff like that and get away with it. But even in the Alpine Ocon days, like I feel like they got along too nicely. I'm like, where's this Fernando Alonso that we miss?
It's like I miss the old Kanye. I miss the old Nando.
Yeah.
Moving on to the Dutch Grand Prix, Stake F1 team will not be able to run as Stake this weekend due to restrictions on gambling advertising in the Netherlands. The team is expected to run as Kick Sauber. You know, I feel like a lot of the teams that have gambling site sponsors hit these obstacles in a number of countries, especially in Europe, that have restrictions on gambling advertising. Do we eventually think that Formula One will outright ban gambling advertising the same way they did tobacco?
No, I think, well, potentially, but they always find a way. Like, if you look at it now, it's all e-cigarette sponsorships are all over the cars. You look at Velo is one of the main ones. And even when they go around to different places, the sponsorship is obviously still there, but it's just the branding has changed. Like, I think there was one track that they just put Love on the side of it.
Right. But it was the same font and it looked, yeah. You know, it's kind of what they did in with when Philip Morris and Marlboro were the main sponsor, one of the main sponsors of Ferrari.
Yeah.
They had a Philip Morris logo, yeah, that was like essentially the color scheme, mm-hmm, of a pack of Marlboro cigarettes.
Yeah.
But they could no longer outright say it was Marlboro. So, mm-hmm, you still had the imaging there that people associated with, yeah, the brand.
Exactly. You know, sometimes that is powerful enough that it is just the color scheme. And I think Ferrari also then had a barcode like on the car. Ferrari used to have, was it Mission Winnow? Wasn't that I feel like that was an, mm-hmm, e-cigarette sponsorship. And those also ask questions of people being like, right, who is this? What's Mission Winnow on there? Search it up and it's just, bam, there you go. So that marketing has worked for them to go look at this tobacco company. So I do think that, yes, they could potentially be like, cool, banned, you're not allowed it on this or that because it just makes it easier. But then there'll always be companies that find a way, just like Steak, they've got another company which is Kick. And they'd be like, cool, we're going to put Kick on the car for this weekend. We'll just become Kick. I mean, if people still go to Kick, then the parent company of Steak still gets money. So I think, regardless, I think there are important issues that should definitely be not sponsorship on the car. I think, you know, getting rid of the tobacco sponsorship, whilst they were incredible, incredible liveries, and that's probably the saddest thing about it. Like Marlboro, great livery. I'm thinking of Rothmans McLaren. Oh, one of the most beautiful liveries as well.
I also loved the Rothmans Williams branding from, yeah, the, yeah, I think, the
90s. 96, yeah. It was brilliant.
Iconic. Yeah.
Such a good livery. And then you even start to look at, you know, is alcohol sponsorship good? But then you'd lose other great liveries like the Martini Williams, another incredible classic livery. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I do think that some things they've done the right stuff about, you know, getting rid of the tobacco sponsorship for sure. But would they get rid of the gambling? I don't think so. I think it's been an issue that's gone on for so long, and you look at other football has it. They have it all around the stadiums. They have it on team shirts. I think unless something massive happens, it's not going to go.
I know in English football, I think the lion's share of jersey sponsors are betting sites.
Yeah, a lot of them are. And one thing they can't do though is if for the kids' shirts, they're not allowed to have the sponsorship on there, so they replace it with something else, but or they have nothing at all. But mm-hmm, yeah, they have to get the offer there, which obviously could become a problem for that certain sponsor. But hey, I suppose if they're paying that much money and they want to get their name out there, they might not even care about that too much, because really is kids their target market? No, definitely not.
Right.
Unless they're right, trading, cool, Pokemon cards, which obviously, you know, they've got me. They've got me from a young age.
That should just be the default. If you have a gambling site as your jersey sponsor, the kid one has to be Pokemon.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Which you could argue that Pokemon is a form of gambling, but here we are.
I mean, yes, it is. And I am addicted to it. But that's a conversation for me and a future therapist of mine. Let's get into our Dutch predictions.
Right. This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ Mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to iqbar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's iqbar.com, promo code KELLER20.
Dutch Grand Prix predictions. We talked earlier this week about Zandvoort historically. You know, it has been around since like the late 40s, first ran a Formula One Grand Prix in 52, ran off and on from 52 to 85, large break with Max Verstappen back in Formula One. It came back in 2021, was supposed to run in 2020. COVID shut that down. Max has 100% win rate in the last 3 years, and I think pole rate.
Yeah.
And like 87% of laps led in the last 3 years. Zandvoort historically is a track that doesn't have a lot of overtakes. We talked about how 21 and 22, not a lot of overtakes. Last year was an absolute like clusterfuck with the rain. We had a record number of overtakes. As long as it stays dry, we'll probably see go back. We both agreed it would go back to what we saw in 21 and 22, where it's going to be like a Monaco. It's going to be like a Hungaro ring.
Yeah.
Quali's going to essentially decide the race for the most part, unless the team messes up strategy. So let's get into it with our predictions. Do you want me to go first? You want to go first?
I'm happy to go first. I think let's just do our one and one. Let's do. So who are we going to get first place? I'm going to go for my first place first. And I think based on, before I see anything, I don't know if any upgrades are coming. I haven't seen how the cars perform out on track, so I don't know anything of that. But if I'm going to base this on what I can closely compare it to recently, I'm going to say Hungarian Grand Prix is my best comparison because it's also another tight, twisty, technical circuit, not a lot of overtaking. Who was the best at Hungary? That was the McLarens. So I'm going to go for a Lando Norris win for this one.
Love that. For my P1, I'm going to go with Max at the home crowd. I think the Orange Army is going to give him a little something extra, and he's going to be able to pull something out in qualifying, whether it's just sheer determination and grit or whether it's tow from another car. I don't know, but I think Max is going to pull off P1.
I'm going to go with Oscar Piastri for P2. Again, McLaren were just really, really good in Hungary. I think they had that, locked in. Apart from the little team games that they were having between the two of them, having to sort that out. But I think, Oscar will back up his teammate and will be P2.
I think we're going to continue to see Mercedes playing the hot hand with Lewis Hamilton. I'm going to put Lewis Hamilton at P2.
Okay, I'm then going to go for Max Verstappen. He will be in third position, I think.
So you're going to have an all-orange podium
in
front of the orange arm.
It is papaya, James. They'll come for you again. Don't you start them. They will come with their pitchforks and their torches, and they will cross the Atlantic and get after you. Don't you get them started. But yes, I'm going to go for all shades of orange, tangerine, satsumas, kumquats. I don't know if that one counts, but they're going to be on the podium.
Great. I have Lando Norris P3. So I have Max Lewis Nando or Lando. Max Lewis Lando. It's like a tongue twister on my podium. Okay. P4.
P4. I am going to go for Lewis Hamilton on that one. I think, Mercedes has been coming back and I can't see Checo getting in the top five in that Red Bull. So yeah, I'm going to go Lewis.
I'm going to say Oscar P4. I know the McLarens are very strong, but I'm just sort of predicting that they're going to have another strategy mishap that ends
blunder.
Up relegating them down to P3 and P4. Okay, P5. Let's round it out.
This is one that I had a bit more difficulty on and was like, do I put a Ferrari in there? Are they going to sneak in? But I just think Ferrari have just been a little bit off the pace, out of form. Yeah. And so I am going to go with George Russell on this one. I'm going to go P5 for the mouse from Flushed Away is going to be in P5.
So I had Leclerc in P5, and then I thought about it, and I was like, you know what? I think George Russell. I'm going to put George Russell there as well. So, it's interesting. Our top five is very, it's all the same people. It's just shuffled around slightly differently.
You are flying the Dutch flag for Max. I fully back it. I feel like he is massively spurred on by the home crowd. And I think you can never, ever count out Max. And if he does win, it wouldn't be like, wow, okay, that actually really surprised me. I'd be like, do you know what? I feel like I've gone a bit more with maybe my heart than my head in these predictions. But
yeah.
But then again, I'm a little hungry, so I don't know.
Yeah, I'm going Dutch treat for the Dutch Grand Prix. I'm eating stroopwafel. I'm sitting at a rice tovel. I'm, looking at paintings by Van Gogh, other Dutch references.
Getting your clogs on. And you're going to be windmilling after the race.
I'm reading stories about the boy that put his finger in the dike.
Sorry?
Do you know that? Yeah. You know that the...
Interesting. Story.
No, not that. The dike is like a thing that holds water.
Yeah, that's what I was on about. I was just like, why did you put your finger in there?
Because it's flooding. So he puts his finger in...
This is a story for next week's podcast. Because that is going to do it. That's all we've got time for today's podcast. Thank you, James, as always, for joining me and just having some tremendous laughs, as always. We hope that you've enjoyed them wherever you are in the world watching at the moment. Make sure you follow us on whatever platform you are listening to as well. Follow the official WTF1 socials across all platforms, myself and, of course, James's socials. Go check them out. And we will see you for the next podcast after the Dutch Grand Prix. Enjoy it, and we'll see you then. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar. With a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry, IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ Mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.